The Liberals Gun Corner, a proud progeny of the Gun Rights Radio Network, hosted by Cowboy T, San Francisco liberal with a gun. This podcast is always available at www.liberalsguncorner.com, and you can email us at cowboyt@liberalsguncorner.com. Cowboy T, San Francisco liberal with a gun. You know us here, we don't shy away from the heavy-duty stuff. The last two episodes were pretty heavy-duty all around. Some of you have asked me, well, hey, Cowboy T, your show's really good. How come you don't do episodes more often? Well, first, thank you. All I'm really doing here is telling the truth. I remember something my parents told me back when I was a kid. It goes like this. Son, telling lies is hard work, because you got to remember what you said. But telling the truth's easy, because you don't have to remember what you said. It's already there. They're right. Telling the truth's easy compared to lying. Oh, it's also way more honorable, by the way. So, yeah, it's work to put together an episode that I think you might actually find interesting and worth listening to. But I got to tell you, it's worth it. And that's why I like doing it. The truth, as the old folks used to say, still say, really shall set you free. Now, as for the frequency of the episodes, well, that's part of it, too. See, if I don't feel like I've got something worth your time to listen to, well, I don't want to waste your time. That's not fair to you. Mainstream media, look at them. NBC, CBS, CNN, Fox, all those folks, they do that. They just put in any old stuff to fill time slots. Hey, look, Kardashians! You know what I'm talking about. You see, to them, dead air means air that isn't stuffed full of commercials that line our pockets. Now, they don't want that, oh no. So they stuff, oh, filler-type material in there to keep you watching. That's why one reason, actually it's the major reason why I rarely watch TV anymore. Hey, ever since they took off Star Trek's Deep Space Nine off the air, I just don't see the point. But, you see, I don't have that pressure to, you know, maximize my podcast income, because I don't do this for money. It actually costs me a bit of money. And of course, it costs some of my time to do this. But again, it's worth it. Remember, freedom ain't free, folks. It takes work. And that means I got to have a good reason for you to listen. Believe me, when I've got something I think's worthy of your attention, an episode will be made to cover it. Oh yeah, I am not shy. You've probably guessed that by now. And that's why I'm so careful in my requests for your time. And that's really how I view it, folks. I'm asking you for some of your time. And since presumably you do value your time, well, then what I've got to say, it better be worth it. The fact that you consider this podcast worth listening to, well, that means a heck of a lot to me. Thank you. And it also means I got to do the very best I can. So, let's start off with some gun talk. Specifically, some Mosin talk. Yeah, you know I love me some Mosin Nagants, don't you? Of course I do. Why? Well, that should be obvious. Because they're cheap. Oh, and they're still full of history, too. I just recently bought a round receiver one. This was a wartime production in the 1940s. Got it for $120. Folks, I still don't know where you can find a better deal for a full-power, general-purpose, 30-caliber rifle that actually shoots well. And Mosins do shoot well. Yeah, sure, it's got the wartime level of finish and, well, quote-unquote, detail on it. What that means, it looks a little rough. You can definitely see the machining marks on it. During the war, the Soviets didn't have time to do all the nice finishing stuff that they would do back in the 20s and the 30s, and the inspector let external finishing things go out the door that they would never have allowed previously. Hey, they were fighting against the Nazi Germans, and they needed guns right now. But, gotta tell you, after I got all the Cosmoline off of it, you see, I consider it a good sign when an old military surplus rifle is just slathered with the stuff. After I got all that goo off of it, I took a good look at the bore. The way that you can tell a gun is probably going to shoot well is if it's got a good bore in it. Well, with this one, not only does it pass the 308 test with flying colors, that's where you take a 308 round and insert it bullet first into the muzzle and see how far the bullet sticks out. If it does stick out, that's good. Not only did this barrel, not only did this gun pass that 308 test with flying colors, but I got to tell you, that bore, the rifling's actually sharp. The whole bore is shiny. Yeah, shiny. You never see that on a Mosin. It looks like it's still blued, like the original bluing from the arsenal. Seriously, folks, this thing's in beautiful condition. I think all they did was test fire it with a few rounds right before they dipped it in the goo for storage. The barrel, the inside of the bore on this thing, looks like it's brand spanking new. Now, what about the bolt? Well, it operates pretty easily. Actually, it's not all that stiff, and this is especially for a Mosin. Now, yes, it's all relative when we talk about Mosin bolts. They do tend to be a bit stiffer than, say, oh, your typical Remington 700 or your Savage 110. This is just generally speaking. It's just the design. But once I got all the goo off of it and put the thing back together, it's actually a pleasure to actuate. Oh, the wood looks really good, too. The furniture is just in great condition. The birch wood, it looks terrific. Yeah, I know. What am I making a big deal out of this for? The Russians and later the Soviets made millions of these rifles. I know. Well, some of those are really nice. This is definitely one of the nicer ones. Now, all that said about the rifle, well, sure, I just made the rifle sound like it's great, and that's because it is. I got really fortunate. Well, it helps that I know what to look for. But what about shooting it? Doesn't matter how pretty a gun is. Let's face it, pretty is as pretty shoots. That's one of the great things about Mosins, shooting them. Not only are they accurate, and this one is, but also, I told you one of the major appeals about Mosins are that they're cheap. Well, so's the ammo. The military surplus ammo is still also pretty darn cheap. And, well, for now, it's still plentiful and available. I strongly suggest that every household in America have a Mosin and at least one, quote-unquote, spam can, as we call them. This is of the Soviet-era mil-syrup ammo. Each spam can has 440 rounds in it. Now, this is a steel core, steel-cased, Bird-Am primed stuff, so sorry, hand loaders, you're not going to be reloading these cases. Well, gee, I was thinking, gee, that sucks for me because I'm a hand loader. But it actually doesn't matter. The ammo's only 20 cents a round, so who cares? Heck, it costs that much, or more, to hand load 7.62x54R. It's just like 308 Winchester or 30-06 that way. For those of you who've never seen a 7.62x54R round, well, just imagine, just picture in your mind a severely souped up 30-30. That pretty much describes it. Now, I got to tell you, I hadn't shot any mil-syrup ammo through any of my Mosins until recently. So, I went with a fellow liberal recently who lives in my neck of the woods. He and his family emigrated here all the way from Russia several decades ago, so that'd be the Soviet days. Yeah, he's all about the Second Amendment too, just like I am. This guy needs to be. Because his wife is beautiful. He needs every round he can get his hands on. Oh, enough about that. But she is beautiful. Now, we're shooting my Mosin. We're also shooting his Vepr in 7.62x54R. It's basically a semi-automatic Kalashnikov action. They're fun. Now, when shooting the Mosin, yeah, we got a little wimpy. We used a folded-up washcloth as a butt pad. Hey, folks, a Mosin's metal butt plate does not feel too pleasant against the shoulder after a few rounds, so this definitely helped with the fun factor. We used mil-syrup rounds exclusively that day. I gotta say, those rounds are not only not wimpy, by far, they're also good shooting. You see, I'd always used the Pervy Partizan ammo from Serbia. This is Boxer Prime brass-cased ammunition. That's the more recent stuff, and it is reloadable. Shoots really well on my Mosin. and it's also not corrosive. The Eastern European milsurp ammo, though, all of that stuff's corrosive. Every bit of it. Some folks hear that, scares them off. Oh, I don't want to shoot corrosive ammo in my rifle. But it shouldn't. It shouldn't scare people. Because the corrosive aspect is actually really easy to deal with. Seriously, it is. After shooting, all you do is flush water down the barrel, preferably from the breech end, and that flushes out all the corrosive salts left over from firing. Then, well, you just clean with your favorite gun cleaning solvent. Hops number 9 is my favorite. If you like gun scrubber, use that. Whatever you use, just clean your gun as normal. This is easy to do. You may hear some people telling you to, oh, for example, spray Windex or something else with ammonia down your barrel. I say, don't bother. Ammonia doesn't help with the corrosive salts. Straight water is not only better, but also cheaper. Do this every time you shoot, like you're supposed to, and clean with your hops or your gun scrub or whatever also immediately after, like you're supposed to, and your gun will stay in great shape for longer than you will. Really. The older gun guys with the beards and the suspenders, you know, the ones that were doing this back when a lot of us were still twinkles in our pappy's eyes. Those old guys were right. There is no reason to be afraid of shooting that older corrosive ammo. So go buy a spam can and go have some fun. Now, some of you may be thinking, now, Cowboy T, You're prejudiced in favor of Mosins. Well, duh, of course I am. They're cheap. I can afford those. But that doesn't mean that I don't like the Mausers and the Swiss K-31s and the Japanese Arisakas and the Italian Carsanos and all the rest of them. Problem is, those rifles aren't $120 anymore. Mosins are. How ironic. That what we used to call the commie gun, well, that and the AK-47, how ironic that this old commie rifle meant for Russian peasants is now so popular over here in the States. I remember the days of glasnost and perestroika very well, folks. One of the best things that happened to our world in modern times is the end of the Cold War. Absolutely. Before Comrade Stalin took over, we were still buds with the Russians. Yeah, they were our pals. We liked them. We got along with them great. We even made rifles for them. We made Mosin-Nagants for them. Well, after the Cold War ended, we got to renew that friendship with the people over there. And folks, that's a really good thing. Just look at the Russian and Ukrainian diaspora that's over here in this country, including my friend that I went shooting with. He's from Russia. Oh, and one other neat side effect of all this. We got to import a lot of their military surplus arms and military surplus ammo. They have tons of it over there. They also had some really cool small arms, like, for example, the 1895 Nagant revolver. I talked about that, I think, in episode 3. And since they have so many of these things, since they have so many of these Mosins and such like that, SKSs, and, I mean, truckloads of surplus ammunition that they want to get rid of, they sold all that to us for basically scrap metal prices. That's why Mosins are $120, folks. It's not because they're not good shooters. It's because the price we got them for. Case in point, there was one show that I was at. This is, you know, case in point of talking about the benefits of the Cold War ending. I was at this gun show. I met this Ukrainian dude. He and I were talking Mosins. This guy was all excited to describe him and talk about him and such as that. He was really proud of him. He used to use him over in Ukraine. This is before he moved over here. Well, how cool is that? You know, me and the former enemy, supposedly. Of course, he's not my enemy. You know, he's just another guy like I am. Well, this would be just like us, say one of us here from the States going over to Eastern Europe and finding that their gun dealers are selling M1903 Springfields. Huh. Don't know about you, but I'd be going, wow, you guys use those over here? Whoa, that's cool. What do you guys think of them? They're pretty good, aren't they? That's what this Ukrainian guy was doing. And he's right. Mosins are cool. They are good. Well, all that you just heard, you know, the benefits of the Cold War ending, I thought about that when I bought this particular Mosin. Y'all remember Glasnost, Perestroika, all that? Those of you who are old enough to remember this? Well, that, which let us get to know each other again on a friendly basis, that means we've all benefited. Russians, Ukrainians, well, Eastern Europeans generally, and us Americans. Yep, us gringos too. I considered that as I was firing that rifle with my Russian immigrant friend. So it was a great day on several levels. We'll be back after this short break. See you in a bit. Okay, we're back. We're about to get into something very serious here, folks. And I would even say downright scary. I've read this over and over again over the last, I don't know, week and a half. And I'm still amazed that what you're about to hear could actually happen here in the United States of America. Just this month, about 10 days ago, I learned about a situation out in a county called Prince William County here in Virginia and a city called Manassas. Here's the short version of the story. There are a couple of high school students, a boyfriend and a girlfriend. The girlfriend decided it would be kind of neat if she took naked pictures of herself and sexted them to her boyfriend. The girl at the time was 15. I don't know how old she is now. Presumably she's 16. Well, she sexted a naked picture of herself to her also underage boyfriend. Well, the boyfriend saw this and said, "Ooh, yeah, you know, my girlfriend's hot." And he responded with a short video of himself also naked. Well, the girl's mother saw the video and called the cops. The cops arrest this boy. The prosecutors over in Prince William County charge him with manufacturing child pornography. Yeah. The case goes to trial, and it turns out the prosecutors forgot to certify that he was a minor, so the case got dropped. Well, that didn't stop the police department. They right away filed new charges. Yeah, they filed new charges against this boy. They forcibly took pictures of his genitalia. Yes, you heard that right. They forcibly took pictures of his genitalia. Uh-huh. Oh, and that wasn't all. Furthermore, the prosecutors got a search warrant to take him to a hospital, inject him with something that would make his genitalia erect, and take pictures of his erect penis. That's right, folks. They were actually going to do this. They were serious about this. I learned about this from two separate media outlets. The Washington Post was one of them. And there's another local media outlet that I will decline to name because these people actually printed the boy's name. I remind you, he's a minor. He's under 18. How dare they? To my utter surprise, the Washington Post chose not to print this minor boy's name. I'd say that's a rare sign of good taste on their part. Well, first and foremost, I sincerely hope that every other cop out there is horrified by the act that some of their brother and sister officers did to this kid. Now, I already know that some cops are, because I've talked with them. These certainly number among the good cops. But it brings to mind a question. What are we, generally speaking, allowing our prosecutors and the police at their command to get away with. We're seeing injustice after injustice. I mean, look at the no-knock warrants and the busting in with the SWAT team and all that business. And now this. Why also isn't this all over the mainstream media? Really, folks, I'm not finding this in CNN, NBC, ABC, CBS, Fox News, none of those. I'm not seeing it there. I'm seeing it in local news only and some of the much smaller news outlets. How come this isn't all over? Where's Anderson Cooper now, right? Let's do a little thought experiment here for a moment. Switch the sexes. Now it's the girl that has pictures of her genitalia forcibly being taken by the police department, and the prosecutors and the police intend to go further. They intend to take even more explicit photos of her genitalia. Would the news media care more then? Would Anderson Cooper and Aaron Burnett and all these other folks, you know, Greta Van Susteren, would they be upset then? Also, we've heard about the moms demanding action. Yeah, those folks, where are they now? How about the National Organization for Women and all those other feminist organizations? Where are they now? Where are you now, Gloria Steinem, Marilyn Fry, Hillary Clinton, for that matter? Oh, that local media outlet, if you think I'm, you know, got the tinfoil hat on, think again. That local media outlet that I won't name, they did print the boy's name. That's why I'm not naming this local media outlet. However, they chose not to print the girl's name. And she sexted naked pictures first. As they used to say on Monday Night Football, you make the call. Here's another question. How come the feds aren't prosecuting these prosecutors and the police for themselves conspiring to manufacture child porn? I'm still amazed, by the way, that the progressive-oriented Washington Post and generally feminist Washington Post even bothered to cover this. I guess they felt that they had to. I'm glad they did. But how come these folks that are doing that, that did this act to this boy, aren't themselves being prosecuted, huh? Well, here's what I think ought to happen to these folks and these Prince William County prosecutors and their enablers in the City of Manassas Police Department. Here's what really ought to happen. First and foremost, like I mentioned, they ought to be prosecuted by the feds for themselves manufacturing child porn. Oh, and since, by the way, they did this under color of law, meaning they would use force against this boy up to and including deadly force, meaning guns, let's also hit him for charges for misuse of authority. And since, of course, the police do carry guns, let's get him for possession of a firearm while committing a felony, meaning the manufacturing of the child porn. And after the conviction, don't give him club fed. Oh, no, no. And don't give him solitary either. That's too good for him. Not for something like this. Put him with the general population. Same length of sentence you and I would get. Now, is any of that going to happen? Well, I think we all know the answer to that. Of course not. The blue shield, they're going to protect themselves, right? So what do we do about it? Well, first, we don't let this go. We post the heck out of it everywhere. If you got an account on a forum, post this, please. Okay, talk about it. Call into the news shows and ask why this egregious act by the Prince William prosecutors and the Manassas police isn't all over the major TV news outlets repeatedly, the way that, say, the Kardashians are. And by the way, we need to be calling up like this repeatedly over time. We can't let this go. We must also recognize, every one of you within earshot of this, must recognize that doing this to a boy is just as egregious as doing it to a girl. And we've got to treat it with the same gravity and penalties. Now, I can only imagine that family's thoughts right now. I'll tell you something. If it were my dad and the police with their guns showed up to demand a slideshow of my private parts, my dad would fill them full of lead before he ever allowed that to happen to me. Matter of fact, he nearly did fill someone with lead back when I was a kid. He thought this particular someone was molesting me. Now, it turns out it didn't happen, thank goodness. But nonetheless, my dad was there to protect me from sexual assault. And what the and what these Prince William County prosecutors and the Manassas City Police at their command did to this teenage boy, I mean, even making, merely making the demand in the first place. Well, folks, when the people who have legal authority granted to them to use force against you, when they come up to you and make demands, you know damn well what's likely to happen to you if you say no, even if the demand is egregious. More and more, it seems, the result is that you get beaten bloody, maybe bones broken, cuffed, thrown in jail, maybe even shot and killed. Let's see how you react when you're surrounded by armed thugs commanding you to do something. And oh, by the way, you know that those armed thugs can hurt you grievously and lock you up and still stay on the job. Nothing happens to them. So yeah, therefore, I would classify their demand of this kid as sexual assault. Now, there is an update to all this. In the end, these officials decided not to serve the search warrant demanding pictures of the boy's erect penis. But they'd already taken pictures of his non-erect genitalia. Now, this is according to both the Washington Post and the LA Times. I'm guessing, and this is just a guess, that when it came out they wanted to, you know, force an erection out of this kid and snap, you know, take a slideshow of it, I'm guessing all the negative publicity about that did not go so well in the halls of government over there. I still can't believe I'm telling you about this. I still can't believe this happened in the United States of America. You know, the fact that they tried it in the first place should tell you, all of you, something, whether they dropped that second warrant or not. And what it's telling us, it ain't good. Folks, these officials in Manassas need to see some jail time for this one. I'm serious. Jail time. Not, you know, prosecutorial discretion. No, BS. They need jail time. If you live in Virginia, and especially if you're anywhere in Prince William County or the city of Manassas, you need to make some noise. That's the liberal thing to do. Well, come to think of it, that's the conservative thing to do, too. There's no difference there. Make noise about this, folks. Keep it in the news. And make sure these thugs over there get prosecuted. I can't do it by myself, folks. I'm just one person. I need your help on this one. Think about it if it were your son. I wonder if those people who don't bother to report on it or don't seem to care about it because it's a boy, I wonder what they would think if it were their sons. I wonder what those prosecutors and those police that did this to this kid would think if it were their son. We'll be back. Okay, we're back. We just got through discussing a very egregious case in which not only was it egregious, like to the point of making child porn, traumatizing young boy, but you also saw a case of selective, i.e. unequal enforcement. Both kids did the same thing, only the boy got prosecuted. He's facing felonies now. How come they're not doing that to the girl? Personally, I don't think they should be doing it to either one, but if you're going to do it to one, why aren't you doing it to both? There's something wrong here, folks. Well, now we're going to talk about something else, speaking of, you know, scary things. We're going to talk about open carry. See, I like to go to gun shows. I'm going to preface this with a little story about me, okay? Since it's the Liberals Gun Corner and I run the thing, I get to do that. I do like going to gun shows because basically they're fun. And when I do, I always open carry a revolver. It's my Smith & Wesson Model 629. It's a really nice revolver. You know, rosewood grips, Nice stainless steel. I always keep it clean. It's not loaded according to the gun show rules. No, it's not a law. Rather, it's the gun show's policy because of insurance reasons. That's why I keep it unloaded. Do I like that? Well, no, I don't think we should have to do that. We shouldn't have to necessarily unload our guns. However, I look at it this way. Better to have a gun show than to not have a gun show. And if they didn't have that policy, the insurance companies wouldn't insure them. The greater good served by having the show, folks. We can work on the insurance thing later. But for now, let's have the show. Now, why do I open carry at these events? Well, the first reason should be obvious. It's a political statement in support of the right to keep and bear arms. I believe in that sort of thing. You know, I'm the San Francisco liberal with a gun. I also know it's a kind of sort of friendly audience. Yes, it's pro-gun, but remember, I'm a liberal and most of the folks there are conservatives. That's why I say it's a kind of sort of friendly audience. Nonetheless, I seem to get along with them pretty well. And I also do so to help bridge the gap between especially liberal and conservative gun owners. We're all in the same boat, folks, and we need to present a unified front. I've been talking about this for a little while now. Now, where else I open carry? Well, I might open carry at, say, places around the gun show where I'm pretty confident the attendees, you know, tend to go afterwards, like, say, the local McDonald's or the local Starbucks. No, I'm not trying to do my, you know, yeah, I'm open carrying sort of thing. I just happen to be open carrying anyway, and I might be hungry or thirsty. So I'll stop in for a quick bite or a quick, you know, Frappuccino or whatever. I'll also carry at other overtly open carry friendly places. And yes, there are some in my neck of the woods, thank goodness. I will also open carry in national parks. Why? This is due to, you know, big hairy things like bears that have teeth and claws that will hurt you. Now, where do I not open carry? Yes, there are places where I will not open carry, or for that matter, concealed carry, but we're talking about open carry right now. Well, the first is places where I have a reasonable belief that open carry is not considered normal. We'll get into what that means later and why I say that here in a moment. I'll also not open carry any place prohibited by law, for example, schools. Now, the reason I bring this up, there have been a few incidents in the news recently about open carriers in, for example, Texas. You've heard about the folks that went into the Jack in the Box with their AR-15s. Somebody from the Home Depot seeing these guys walking called the cops. 18 or something like that, SWAT team cars showed up, and there was this whole big to-do in the news about it. There are even some things said about it that weren't true. For example, the Jack in the Box employees went and locked themselves in the freezer, you know, trying to hide from the gun owners. Never happened. However, it got major play that supposedly it did. Well, it was confirmed by a Jack in the Box corporate officer that no, that didn't happen at all. Unfortunately, we got negative press for this. Okay. Also, open carriers did something similar in the Target store. They were walking around with their AR-15 modern sporting rifles out in the Target. Scared the heck out of people. People complained. Now, I do understand the point that these open carriers are trying to make. Oh boy, do I. Absolutely, I get the point. It's that this is a right, not a privilege. But folks, doing it that way is not helping us. I know, we're in a rock and a hard place situation here. We want to exercise our rights. We want other people to know. We want to educate folks that this is a right. Yet, we don't want to scare them away from us. How do we carry guns and not scare people? First and foremost, we must be ambassadors whenever we discuss the right to keep and bear arms. What does that mean? It means being nice. We have got to be nice, folks. Whenever we open carry, we must act like Boy Scouts. And that includes even when we don't want to, even when we encounter jerks out there. We must remain like Boy Scouts. Our behavior must remain beyond reproach because you know somebody's going to be filming it. Also, pick your venues with long-term results in mind. Forget the short-term gratification, folks, stuff. Yeah, I know. Those open carriers that went to the Jack in the Box and the Target, I'm sure they felt good, like, yeah, we exercised our rights, and everybody saw us, yeah. Well, that's thinking short-term. We got to think long term. We got to think 10 years from now, and that doesn't do it. Okay? That just scares people. And, oh, by the way, generally speaking, when you're walking around, if you can concealed carry, then do that. And keep it concealed. That's the point of CC. Remember, be polite with this, folks. Give you a couple examples of my own. About a year and a half ago, I encountered the Code Pink folks. I knew I was going to be encountering them. So, what did I do? I grabbed myself one of my guns. Actually, it was my Mosin. It was my Mosin Nagant. I specifically did not grab anything that looked like an AR-15. I did that on purpose. I knew that they were going, ban assault weapons now! That was their mantra. Well, I show up with something with this bolt-action World War II era Russian rifle. Looks to them like a hunting rifle. And they even called it as such. Well, that helped me get into conversations with them because they weren't afraid of me. They didn't agree with my position. I don't agree with theirs. But they weren't, like, viscerally, gut-level scared of me. So they were willing to talk with me. And I think we all benefited from that conversation. I'm sure I know for a fact they benefited. Also, when we of the Virginia Citizens Defense League, the VCDL, did a peaceful protest at a local university in late 2001, I sported a revolver. I specifically did not carry a semi-auto. I open carried a revolver. Why? Because it looks quote-unquote cowboyish. You know, it looks old-time, right? People aren't afraid of cowboy. They might be afraid of an AR-15. They might be scared to death of a Glock, too, because, oh, that's the thing that killed, you know, that shot Gabrielle Giffords in the head. Fortunately, it didn't kill her. She's still alive. But I didn't bring anything that looked like a Glock so that people could go, oh, no! Rather, I chose a wheel gun on purpose. It helped. Our goal, folks, is not to scare people and tick them off at us. No, don't do that. Don't make that your goal. Rather, our goal needs to be to get folks who aren't on our side on our side. Yeah, let's get them on our side, folks. I told you before, I've OC'd at the Chipotle and the Starbucks before, too. I will still do so after a gun show if I'm hungry or if I'm thirsty and it's right by the show. The key is, it's right by the show. But generally speaking, if I'm going to carry, I'll be polite. You know, be discreet about it. Out of consideration for others. That doesn't mean I believe in the right to keep and bear arms any less. If you folks are thinking in any way that, oh, Cowboy T is capitulating, you don't know me very well. Think again. Rather, it means I'm being polite and considerate of others. You know, that golden rule stuff. I'm not trying to put fear into other people. On the contrary, I've discovered people are afraid of you, they tune you out. Rather, I'm trying to get them on our side. If they're not afraid of me, then I've actually got a chance of actually making that happen. And that's what we want. Now, the way I behave plays into that. I'm already a Boy Scout anyway when I go around. I'm generally a pretty nice guy. And when I OC, I turn it up even a notch beyond that. I have to. I'm an ambassador. So my behavior certainly factors into that. They got to see me as a nice guy. Also, my choice of firearms factors into this. And that's whether it's a long gun or a handgun. I told you about why I carry the Model 629, the revolver, with the wooden grip. It's pretty. You know, it looks nice. You know, it's a barbecue gun. It also doesn't look tactical. Or like the police have, or something like that. People seem to respond better to that, and so that's what I choose to open carry. When it comes to long guns, I've told you, I've slung the Mosin over my shoulder, and I've done so with the bolt open. Yeah, bolt open, so people who know guns can see, okay, he's not a threat or anything like that. Also, I'll do my .357 Magnum lever gun. I've got one of those. It's a Rossi copy of a Winchester Model 92 in .357 Magnum. It's fun to shoot. I've talked about it in the previous episode before. And it looks cowboy. Yeah. Again, people are going to see an AR-15 and go, oh my God, it's an assault weapon! Even though it's not. That's what they've been programmed, unfortunately, by our various news media to think, oh, it's an assault weapon. But they can't say that about my cowboy-looking lever gun. Uh-uh. You know, now I look like Annie Oakley's husband. Gosh, if only I'd been so lucky back in the day. Frank, you know, Frank Butler was a very fortunate man. So that's my choice of firearms. And experience shows me it helps. Remember, folks, hearts and minds. We get those by insisting on our rights. Yeah, true. And even demonstrating that. Also true. But also by doing it in a way that people out there that we want to convince have a better chance of actually hearing. This ain't Switzerland, folks, where you got folks, you got people walking around with full auto machine guns strapped on their backs all the time. They're used to seeing that over there in Switzerland. People here aren't. So, when you open carry, unless you've got a really specific reason, and this is beyond, it's my right, well, I'd suggest leaving the ARs and such as that at home. Instead, consider bringing something else. Yeah, yes, of course it's our right. But public relations matters. Rome wasn't built in a day, folks, and we've got to remember that. I've said it before. The key to freedom is the ability to defend yourself. And if you don't have the tools to do that, then you're at the mercy of those who will do bad things. Well, in this case, there's more than one meaning. Bad things means, here, more gun restriction. Do we want that? I hope not. I sure don't want it. Bad guys sure don't follow it. Only the good guys do. The tools for self-defense may be guns, and I'd argue that that's true. My dad certainly would argue that that's true. And the tools, likewise, for keeping us from bad legal regimes like California, New York, New Jersey, Maryland, you know, places where they've got really restrictive gun laws. Well, the tools are, in this case, public relations, active lobbying, and above all else, voting. Yes, folks, you've got to vote for politicians who will actually back what our Constitution actually says. No, that's not limited to the Second Amendment. No, no, far from it. But it sure does include it. This is Cowboy T signing off. Until next time. Till then, safe shooting. Think often about your elected officials and what they do. And thanks for listening.